Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's October 25th, 2016. New York City's full of Halloween parties, and but we're talking about beer. It's Cider Week, too, so we got some of our favorite guests. Jeff Cialetti, an author. He's our favorite author of the Year of Drinking Adventurously, which I loved. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm good. How are you, Jimmy?
You know, one night we did a little tasting with Scotch versus Irish whiskeys, and we've got a lot to talk about tonight. His new book's out. It's Beer FAQ, talking about beer around the world. Augie Carden says the cliff notes for anything you should know about beer, something like that. But big praise to you, man, and I'm working on another book too. So Jeff's going to be sitting with me here tonight, kind of a co-host. BR, our favorite Shelton Brothers import person, brought in our good buddies. Please say your name because I can't pronounce it.
Okay. So my name is Daniel Thirier.
Thirier, which I always called T-Rez. You got the extra, and you make good saisons. We're going to talk about some northern French brewing traditions. And a new brewer, a guy who's new to New York City. Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Justin Myers from Palana.
Palana Brauhaus, which is like the only real like scale brewery in Manhattan in New York City. So we have a lot to talk about. German traditions, French traditions, and what's going on in Jeff's Jeff's new book here on Beer Sessions Radio. Big shout out to our sponsors, Beer Sessions Radio, supplier of world-class ales and lagers. And Maggie's tweeting live at beer_sessions. So here we go, guys. Welcome to the show, Jeff. So, you know, Year of Drinking Adventurously was great. That Scotch and Irish tasting. We got to do that again.
Yeah, that was fun. I want to do it again.
Yeah, so what's different about Beer FAQ?
Year of Drinking Adventurously was all kinds of beverages. It included spirits and a little bit of wine and that sort of sake, things like that. But Beer FAQ, as you would guess, is just everything beer-related. And it's the way I like to describe it is sort of like the Commitment Phobes Guide to Beer, where there's a little bit of a lot of different facets of beer, a little bit on styles, a little bit on different malts and different hops, but also things on distribution, the three-tier system, Breweriana, a little bit on travel destinations. There's even a section on beer cocktails and, you know, a section on beer festivals, like, you know, what sort of a curated list of beer festivals, ones that, you know, I think have the staying power, the ones worth checking out versus some of the ones that really aren't.
Now, how's your knowledge of French and German beers? Because we're going to talk a little about German and French beers today.
I mean, it's pretty good. I couldn't rattle off a bunch of brands, but, you know, aside from the big German ones, and I've been to Germany quite a few times and France a few times, and I've been all through through Alsace, which is like the big beer part of France, so that's that's pretty much the extent of my French beer knowledge.
Yeah, so Daniel, tell us a little bit about your brewery. I mean, we know your backstory. I've been drinking your Thirez or Thirier.
Thirier, yeah.
Extra. It's Thirieze.
Yeah, so you have to forget the H. It's T, but it doesn't matter. So yeah. My brewery is in small village. Really, it's a corner, northwest corner of France. I mean, very close to the Belgium border. It's about 10 kilometers from my place. And very near the channel, I mean, the England. So it's north of Normandy, because most Americans know Normandy, and it's 2 hours north of it. So it's really a traditional area for beer, I would say forever, because we don't have grapes, no wine, so we only drink beer.
Well, it's a nice, you know, beer. One thing I love about working with you guys, Shelton Brothers, is just the variety of beers I've tried over the years. But this is one of my favorites. It stands out from other French beers. You know, what's so special about it?
Well, it's interesting because Danielle is the brewery is located in the traditional beer brewing region in the north, where it's too cold to grow grapes, but barley and hops grow very well. So most people know of the farmhouse beer de garde style, very malt forward, fairly a little bit on the sweeter side. But what's really intriguing about Danielle's beers are they're more kind of a hybrid saison. They still undergo sort of an aging period, a maturation period. but a little bit more. This one, for example, the Extra is a dry hopped almost saison style, and just really unique beers brewed with local ingredients, which is also important. Gives you a sense of place.
You know, why did you start? You focus on saisons when you were starting. I know we're from Bière de Garde is a popular style.
Yes, absolutely. So Bière de Garde started in, I would say, in the 70s, maybe 40 years ago, and the main brand is Jeanlin. So that's what...
As I say, Jen Lane.
Yeah, we say Jeanlin. So that's the first, I would say, tasty beer.
When I say it, it sounds like a consumer product, like soap or shampoo, Jen Lane. Yes. But it's not.
So I learned about beer, good beer, with Jeanlin, and also with some Belgian brewers, and mainly beers from Dupont, like Saison Dupont or Moinette, which are some of my favorites beer.
And how is yours different than theirs?
Mine?
Yes.
Wow. I try to mix different influences, you know. So the Bière de Garde, I would say, the more hoppy style from Belgium, and also, especially for this one, the English way to brew, mean low alcohol and a lot of, and very hoppy. English brewers are very good for that, sort of bitter style. And the first time I brewed this beer, but maybe 18 years ago now, was collaboration with a brewer from Kent in England. So I learned a lot. And the main hop used in this beer is called Bramling Cross, and it's from Kent.
Great. And we're going to have Jeff and Justin. Why don't you guys ask them some questions? You're a brewer, you know, grew up in St. Louis.
Right. I mean, how do you think the technique of the French, especially that region, just differs from the Belgian and German style, because they're so close, they share such border in history. What is the technique you think stands out in your process?
So the main thing, one important thing about this beer and my beers is the yeast character, which is not very strong in Bière de Garde. But when I started the brewery, it took me about 2 years, training and everything, and I selected a yeast strain from a Belgium lab, and it comes from a very long time ago from a Belgium brewery. And I work most of the time and with this yeast strain, which it's sort of signature of my beers. And it's a saison yeast. Now it's called French saison yeast. And it's very well known. And it gives very balanced, hoppy and dry and balanced beer. The balance point is very important for me.
Is that a yeast that you developed or discovered? Because I know now it's being used in
In fact, I selected it. Okay, the yeast strain was banked somewhere in a lab, and we had several experiments with different yeast strains, and with my wife, we selected this one just smelling the beer. Then we tasted it too, but just the smell, the balance with the body and the dryness, and now I've been working with this yeast for almost 20 years, so I know how to manage it. You know, temperature, how many generations, how to harvest it. So it's my best friend.
It's great. Welcome, man. I enjoyed your beer for many years.
Thank you.
So, you know, obviously France is a country better known for another type of beverage.
Yes.
And then, you know, you're close.
Cider. It's cider week, guys.
And also, you know, you're right by Belgium, which is obviously better known for beer. What would you say the French identity is for beer, the French beer identity, and how do you assert that, like, to... you know, those of us who are into beer are familiar with French beers, but for the rest of the population, people don't usually think of, you know, France for beer. So how would you say you and your peers are really trying to assert that identity?
I'm not sure there is a French identity for beers, because beers mainly, there are two regions in France about beers, so northern France and eastern France, so we are close to Belgium and eastern close to Germany. Rest of France is mainly wine country.
Yeah.
So we are trying to rebuild, to make sort of revival of craft beer. But now it's going in all direction, I would say. You know, some brewers, very very good, but I'm more on the IPA and, you know. So it's going in several directions, I would say. But the French craft beer scene is booming. I mean, probably 1,000 brewery soon, you know.
Wow.
And we were 20 when I started.
Oh, my God, yeah, that's
it's
insane.
Good.
Yeah, man. Cheers to you, beer pioneer. And Justin, you know, you poured a beer for us. So you're from St. Louis. We'll get to you more in the second segment, but we know that. And you're at Polliner, which is a German style brewery or German owned brewery.
German founded owned brewery. 1634 was our founding date. It was some Franciscan monks who wanted to cheat their way through Lent, so they created liquid bread. It was the Doppelbock that we call Salvator to this day, which is German for savior. So it was a very nice rounded Lent season of fasting when you had that wonderful beer to get you through the cold months, and it took off so well that a few years later they made their own brewery. And maybe 10 years after that, it was nationalized by the government.
But now you're actually, there's a brewery in Manhattan.
Brewery in Manhattan.
Polliner Brauhaus that mm-hmm. you're the brewer at.
Well, it is the first of the brew pubs concepts in North America. They started in 1989 in Munich. My boss, Uli, he is the brewmaster of the original location. It's very beautiful. They're copper. Everything is very polished like a mirror. No matter what I do, I can't get my brewery to look like that. So it's the German secret I must learn. But yes, they took off internationally. A lot of them are in Asia. My mentor, Andreas, he was in the Asian market for about 7 years as the brewmaster for many of the different Polano locations.
And we had him on a couple of years ago. Yeah. So what are we drinking? This is a beer that you've made.
This is Polano's Fest beer for this year, Oktoberfest. It's coming to a close soon, but I still can't keep up with inventory.
And what's this, Jeff and I'll see you, Daniel. Let's taste this beer, and you know, it's a Fest style, but
a Marzen, if you will. It's the more closely resembling the Marzen style of the Fest beer. Mm. This one has a little more heat than your traditional Munich beer. We made it a little above 6%, but still with that balance. You know, you want it traditional. You want that nice biscuity decoction mash to give it those nice caramels on the front, but a nice dry, clean finish. Like all German beers, you want that balance. You want drinkability. You want to go to a beer hall and drink 40 of them, not 3, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Is it biscuit? It's definitely biscuity.
Yeah, that was an excellent description of beer. It's a bit, well, the fermentation is different from mm-hmm. the fermentation we use. So that's probably the main difference. But it tastes great. I mean, very drinkable.
Yeah, it almost tastes like Christmas cookies.
Right?
Should keep it around for a couple more months.
Unfortunately, we're just about out. I have its replacement in the tank. We use an open fermentation vessel to keep us really traditional and Bavarian. And we have a Hellesbock in there that's close to
8%. I was with you about a month ago, and I got to taste through some things. And I know that some of the other brewers in Europe have really said good things about your Schwarz beer.
Yeah, I didn't make enough. That, like. That was out before I even got to know it well, so that probably will be coming back this winter.
Yeah. Well, this is great, man. We're going to talk more with both of you guys. We're back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Go in for understanding when you are away. Can't use my heart to think away the time.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, it's heritageradionetwork.org. It's a great group, nonprofit. There's over 30 shows, Farm Report, Cheese Shows, Chef Shows, and, of course, Beer Assassins Radio. My good buddy Damon Bolte's on the speakeasy, so check him out sometime. You want to talk about cocktails and things. But I'm really thrilled to have, you know, the show is built around having Justin Myers, who's a new brewer who's from St. Louis, is just taking over at Polliner Brauhaus, which is their only real brewery in Manhattan. It's kind of a claim to fame. It's a beautiful brewery, a lot of equipment, and you know, you're gonna have a lot of projects ahead of you. But what's it like for you? Came from St. Louis. You know, you work with our Stephen Hale, who's Schlafly. Tell us how you got started.
Well, I joined the St. Louis Brewers operation with my first job at Ferguson Brewery. A couple years back under Ryan Landolt, great guy, what a great mentor.
Like in Ferguson,
good friend.
Missouri.
Yes, Ferguson, Missouri. The one that no one has ever heard of, right? It was a very great experience.
So you were brewing there during the fires and stuff?
Funny thing, we never had any damage or problems. We were kind of a linchpin of the community. The family that owns the brewery owns several restaurants there, different concepts. And it was a great, great neighborhood. Real good family. It was hard to leave the Ferguson Brewery because of the bond with everything going on internationally, the spotlight.
How did you get this job? So it's a German-funded, you know, little pilot brew pub here in Manhattan. How did they find a guy from St. Louis to come and brew? Why didn't they bring a German guy over?
Funny story was I am a St. Louis guy who moved here in about 2007 right out of college to become a corporate American New Yorker. And I got a little burnt out with that lifestyle, and I wanted to create and make something a little more real, use my hands. And I walked into Polliner one day and was talking to the bartender. I really just want to be a brewer. I want to learn how to make these great beers. This is just like a life's dream. Who's your brewmaster? And this very stout German man behind the bar, I am. You want to come brew with me? You come brew every day. So he took me under his wing, and
your accent sounds Yiddish. You know, come to my house.
You come,
tomorrow.
We break bread. Yes. But it was just wonderful. The access, you know.
You know, and he's dressed. How is he dressed? You can tell he's wearing a vest, a checkered shirt. What are these pants that come to your
Lederhosen?
A little bit of Lederhosen, and
so it's very important.
High stockings,
because it's cold. You have to wear warm. But I usually wear the Lederhosen when I brew, because I saw when I was in Munich, everyone's Lederhosen, it looks like it's third generation from their grandfather. You don't wash this. You just work into it and get a nice patina that look like costume.
So you rub your dirty hands on it.
Rub caustic, yeah. Get wort on it, the mash, everything, get it looking nice and seasoned. And
so Dan, do the French guys, would you do that?
No.
Would you wear dirty pants?
That's a big difference between us. We don't wear these pants, but they are very nice.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
They're comfortable.
Now, last week we had a barbecue guy, and he was talking about being in Texas, and the guy's covered in soot and smoke. And you got to, you know, wear your work.
Got to wear your work. I had that shirt that once said, of course I smell like a brewery. It'd be very appropriate taking the subway home after brew day. People scatter away from you quickly.
Yeah. So we tasted the beer right before the break, Daniel. You said there's different fermenting techniques or traditions from what you're doing and from the Germans?
Well, I'm not very good about German beers, I have to say, and I don't speak German, so I visited Germany, but just a few times. I know Belgium or English ales much better, so I'm not sure I can really compare, you know. I'm sure you can help me on that.
Well, Justin, so how did you learn? So, I mean, you worked in some breweries. Did you start with set recipes that they gave you, or have you modified the recipes?
Well, when I worked with Andreas, I learned the German concept, I guess the overall practice. The beer making, it's very enriched in their culture, right? Entrenched, I guess, is the better word. So it's a very different process than the American style. But writing a recipe is, I think, pretty universal. It took me a couple years working with some really great guys to be able to be an independent recipe writer and brewmaster. No, when they say it, you got to get your elbow grease, put the work in. You have to. There's no way to get the wisdom of a brewer without being in it, having things break, making bad beer, to learn how to make good beer. And I got very lucky having the German mentor and the American mentor, so I got to do the American.
I think you have to go to there. I think there's so much potential there. I think it's probably one of the better brewing systems in New York City. I mean,
she's a beauty. It's all
copper, amazing.
So lots of maintenance.
So what happened? You said you're on your way over. You're almost late. What happened? There was a leak or something?
We have open fermentation, very classic Bavarian style. So in Munich, when you go to any of the Palaner brew pubs, it's all, for the most part, open fermentation. So I had a staff go, oh my gosh, there's a leak. I get this a lot. There's a leak, there's a leak. And you walk back and it's, you know, Krausen coming from your fermentation, you know, very natural process. So it's funny, I get these calls and mild heart attacks that there might be something wrong at the brewery, only to find it's a natural part. So I think I have to do a staff training course to everyone so they can identify danger and not try to kill the poor brewmaster.
The boy who cried leak.
The boy who cried leak or a pressure relief valve, right?
Sounds like one of those ads for men with odor problems. But let's go back to Daniel. So saisons in France, man.
Yeah, so I say that what our French, northern French Bière de Garde and Belgium saison are sort of cousins, I mean close, you know, or, because they have the same origin. So this beer originally were just to refresh the and drinkable for the farmers, people working hard during the summer especially, and they needed to drink a lot, and water was not very safe, you know, so they wouldn't drink any water, only beer all day. And this kind of beer was where brewed for them.
That's going to be the new ad for Evian, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Water's not safe, drink beer.
Absolutely, but it's not true anymore because you can buy, you know, mineral water. But in the mind of people, it stay that beer is safe. Well, if it's not too... So it shouldn't be too strong, okay? So you can drink a lot. And I know I met some old people from customers coming to the brewery. And they said that when they were working, maybe 50 years ago, they would drink between 8 and 10 liters a day of beer. And the farmer would bring a small barrel at the end of the field, you know, so when they stop, they have fresh beer. So that's what beer was made for, okay, wow. To drinkable.
I see the connection now to French and Germany. You know, France and Germany, it's the drinkability of beer and their wine. That's
Yeah, that's the most important point.
Absolutely.
So, of course, now beer change a bit. We sometimes brew stronger beers, you know, for more for evening or meal. But originally and mainly in my intention, beer like this, you can drink that all evening, I would say. Good beer, it's the beer, once you finish your glass, you want another
so
one.
So in the fields, were they like kegs or were they just buckets of beer?
They were barrels, wooden barrels. I have a few in my tap room. If you visit me, you'll see.
They're quite heavy.
So each farm had these small, about 20, 30 liters wooden barrels in the a ceiling, right? A basement. Downstairs. And they were going and get 1 or 2 liter for, you know, for the meal, every meal. It was like, exactly like cider in Normandy. It was the everyday beverage and the only beverage.
How strong were those beers?
Well, probably between 2% and 3%. So very low.
So or you maybe go back to work. That's good.
Yeah.
Keep working beer.
And I liked you mentioned liquid bread.
Liquid bread.
I use this expression all the time because it's true. Beer is liquid bread, and because also it contains, you know, it's made with cereal, so it's good for health.
You know, beer, I love you always bring over some of the Franconia kegs, and we had one of the Weizenauer a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, that, I mean, those are essentially what would have been brought to the fields. It's just something in direct gravity feed.
It tastes like liquid bread to me. There's a bready.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and Weizenauer also uses decoction method, open fermentation. So you're getting really getting that rich malty flavor, which you just can't. I mean, you know, brewers now often say, oh, well, malts are so well modified now, you don't need the double, triple decoction. But that method really does bring out
Justin,
something
different. Justin, what is decoction?
It's a process where you're separating part of your mash and bringing it to a boil, which I think releases such caramel and body, and then you recombine to bring it up.
So almost like reducing part of it.
You're reducing part of it, boiling it, enriching it, and then recombining it to bring it up, the whole mass of your mash, to a different mash
temperature. That's what I do when I cook, man.
This beer I have
here. Just a little bit. Yeah.
We did three decoctions for this Dunkel, and it took me like 6 extra hours.
We're so together. And Daniel, I want some more of your. Is this the. Which one is this? The Tirdier?
Yeah, extra.
Extra.
Yeah. I like the dryness. Yeah. The dry finish is so good.
Yeah, you asked me about differences. The thing you just explained is difference. So we don't use this decoction brewing system. I brew a step infusion. I mean, so I just start maybe, let's say, 55 centigrade Celsius, I mean. And then one maybe 64, and then so we heat the kettle so it's more step infusion, but with several different temperatures, which is very important for the complexity and the body of the beer.
PR is going to translate to Jimmy talk.
Well, no, I didn't want to say that I felt that all brewers who did not use decoction were doing the wrong thing. It's predominantly for the German style beers where that just works so well.
If you're in Munich, they would say you're doing it all wrong.
Well, then there's that.
There are only a handful outside, a relative handful outside of Germany that are actually doing it. I know Live Oak down in Austin, Texas has been doing it for a while, but really they're in the minority as far as anybody who's not German.
I was at a wonderful brewery Sunday in Pennsylvania, got a beautiful tour by some wonderful people, and my question was, do you have wonderful German beers here, do you do decoction mashing? And I got to ask a brewer, and he looked like a deer in headlights, and he's like, we tried it, we did. It was a lot, it added a lot of time to the brew day.
Which brewery was that? You can't tell me.
I mean, I could, it didn't seem as nice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, same with us. The different temperatures we use take more time, obviously, than single step. You say okay, but I stick to it. I mean, good beer needs time anyway. So for every step, you need to respect. You know, so brewing, then fermenting, then we lager. We keep the beer for a few weeks in the tanks before bottling. Then it's bottled fermented, so we have to wait between 2 and 3 weeks before it's ready. So, you know, it takes about 6 weeks. And sometimes our consumers, they don't understand, you know, we run out of one beer and we say, okay, but come back next, the end of the month, okay, because the beer is not ready, we have to wait. it's hard for them to understand, but. Yeah,
I get people irate sometimes at the tasting room. How could you be out of this beer? We came all this weird way to try that. Well, I have 4 other beers you can try.
Exactly. Yeah. So we spend a lot of time. I think you do the same, educating people about beer, about the time, the everything we do to make it good and great.
How many different beers do you make, Daniel?
About 10.
I'll take a refill too. I love
this. Okay.
Certainly.
And then don't worry, Justin, we're going to go to your Doppelbox soon too.
This is quite good, by the way. I'm really enjoying this.
See, as we say on all the tours, you might do the same at a tasting room. They always ask, what is your favorite beer?
Yeah.
Free. So.
Yeah, so we have visitors at the brewery too, and a small tap room. And yes, it's important for us to be able to talk with the people, to educate, as I explained, to show how we work. There's no secret, I would say. We like this.
It's all mysterious. The more of the accent, the better it sounds. I love your beer, man. Let's toast to the TODA, the extra. And we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
All right.
Santé.
That's
nice, man. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I thought it was like some kind of like, hey, Minnie, you're so fine.
Hey, Mickey.
Mickey, that's it. Thank you.
Hey, Mickey.
But we're loving this TODA extra. You know, again, every time you bring someone into the show, BR, I just like, it's one of my favorite beers. I've always wanted to meet the brewer. But I asked you how many beers you made. You didn't tell me.
So now I
brew. How many beers you make that you export to the U.S.?
So I brew about 10 beers all year round. And I export 3, I would say, beer. Yeah, three of them.
Well, three on a regular basis. The Extra, the Blonde, and the Amber. Then we also get the Christmas beer, Bière de Noël. And when we're lucky, Vieille Brune, which is barrel-aged, old brown barrel-aged in red wine barrels.
Oh, I never had that
one. Yeah. Yeah, but it's very, very little, very limited amount. Mm. So I think only a few cases got in the U.S.
I remember years ago when I first was drinking, there tried to be this movement of like French craft breweries. And I know that at one time, Shelton, you guys had a whole portfolio of different ones. Do you feel that you need to be associated with other French craft breweries? Or do you feel like you're better off standing on your own?
Well, I don't need to. I mean, each brewery is different. It's, you know, because each brewer is different. So, but I have good friends in France, and one of them will be with me tonight, so a French brewer. But I was not part of this association, because the important point is not that French beer. The important point, it's my beer, you know, and I happen to be French, so I'm very glad. But, you know, I don't represent, you know. So I love some French beers, but I don't like all of them. You understand what I mean?
I do. That's one thing I think that happens with Shelton Brothers. You guys find these really great beers, and you don't necessarily have to be from France. Like, you probably would be making this beer if you crossed borders. Would you be making this beer in England?
Yes.
Yeah, you probably would.
Yeah.
I always thought your beers are very international.
Yeah.
I love the hop finish.
Yeah.
It's like, you were one of the first beers I had that was, you know, everyone talks about session IPAs. Mm. It was kind of like you guys had two beers, Taras Bulba from Belgium and Thierrier Extra, which at the time were, you know, eye-opening. It's like, wow, they're session beers with a nice hop profile. What are the hops that you use? Because your hops are different. They're not like these huge kind of West Coast hops.
Oh, no. I mostly brew with European hops and, when I can, French hops. So in this one, there are two hops. The first one is called Brewer's Gold. So it comes originally from England, okay, but it's grown just next month to my brewery in northern France. And the second I use is Bramling Cross, and it's only grown in Kent. It's not common. I think I'm the only French brewer to use that hop. I like it very much. So I try to use as most of the time local ingredients means local hops. But locals mean from England, Belgium, you know, it's so close, from Germany. I recently brewed unfiltered lager, sort of Keller beer, with German hops, like Tettnang, Perl, what we call noble hops, and I love them. And I sometimes use West Coast U.S. hops, but just a little. I mean, I try to keep the tradition and work with the local ingredients. Yes.
I saw some photos of your brewery. It's really just this little kind of farmhouse building.
Yeah, because the place, the location, it where I brew, it used to be a brewery 70 years ago. So unfortunately, when I arrived there, when I bought the place, the brewery was not there anymore. It stopped in 1945, exactly, so it's a very long time ago. But just to imagine, in the village I live, about 2,000 people, population, and there were five breweries between the two world wars. So, and next village were eight breweries, and so on. So there were thousands of breweries. Unfortunately, I would say all of them, or 99% of them, just stopped business. I mean,
same in America. We had a brewery for every neighborhood. You know, every patch of land had a brewery, a local, you know, place to get your beer fresh. You'd send your child with a couple quarters and a bucket, and he'd bring home beer for the next couple days. And that went away with the industrialization.
We're
pretty close to that now. It's called child labor. I love it.
You don't send your kin to get the beer anymore, but you can throw a stone and hit five breweries in St. Louis, that's for sure.
Jeff, with beer, FAQ, your new book, you know, and your drink, Year of Drinking Adventurously Around the World, is there one question that you have for Daniel about
I guess the interesting thing is, one of the things that I talk about in my book is this concept that I've been calling the boomerang effect, because I like really bad puns. But it's basically how European brewers influenced the American craft beer scene, and now there are a lot of European brewers that are being influenced by those same American brewers that they influenced. So, you know, now you're seeing a lot of hop forward, you know, American style IPAs, even in the UK where they invented the IPA, and now they're making American style IPA. The new craft brewers are making it. Do you, you know, sort of related to that, and even in Germany they're making IPAs and they're making stouts and things like that now with some of the newer breweries and stuff. And you know, Belgium, you know, who would have thought there would ever be a style called Belgian IPA or Belgian style IPA? So my question is, you know, do you think that sort of brewing in Europe is sort of losing its sort of cultural traditions a little bit and adopting some of these U.S. traditions? And do you think that people should be asserting their individual traditions better?
Well, it's complicated. I think the influences are, you know, both way. I mean, I know that many American brewers visit Europe and sometimes work or as an apprentice in European breweries. And you are right, especially in France now, many young brewers get a very strong influence for the U.S. from IPAs and so on. But still, it's good. I mean, it goes in both, you know, both directions, I would say. And anyway, shortly, as it becomes very difficult to buy hops, American hops in Europe. So IPAs.
It's difficult in America, too.
Yeah. And the price is absolutely crazy. If you want Amarillo or Citra, or you cannot get them all. So I think, anyway, the brewers will have to learn, for those who don't, to work and to make beer with what they have around the brewery. And I think it's a good thing in a way, you know.
I don't have that problem with the we use German noble hops, and the German, you know, classic Braumeisters would tell you, why would you want to hide your beer behind a bunch of hops, right? Why hide any flaws? So I don't believe in that.
Yeah, there's a Norwegian brewery which writes, well, if your beer is not very good, just add a lot of hops.
Add a lot of hops.
And if it's still not good, make it stronger. And if it's not good, age it in barrel. And, you know,
you know.
It's fun because...
And then you've created the next fad.
Is that non-yo?
Yeah. I think people do that with barrel aging, too. They hide a lot of flaws with it.
Yeah,
a lot of times all you taste is barrel.
Sheesh. We're finding out that doesn't hide a lot of flaws anymore.
Barrel aging is very interesting, and I do a little, but still a classic beer should be crisp and clean. And
well, I love the Thierry, aka Thierry's Extra, yeah, so much. But last one, so Justin, you've got like pretty much the only real kind of like full brewery in Manhattan, New York City, and you're just kind of learning the system, and we're tasting what, your Doppelbach right now?
No, this is the Dunkel.
The Dunkel.
This is the Dunkel. We usually have a Munich Dark this time of year, but I want to kind of gradually go with the seasons, with the temperature.
So it's like a Dunkel Lager.
It is a Dunkel Lager.
So far I've had the ones I really like from you. I like your Dunkel Lager and your Schwarz beer.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it about making these kind of dark, sessionable beers that you like?
I just love dark beers.
Because you're doing a great job.
I love dark beers that you can have in the 90-degree horrible summers in the Midwest. And just have this nice black IPA, black Pilsner Schwarz beer, right? Just something crisp and just a lot of people come into the restaurant, I don't like dark beer. Well, have you ever had a variety of dark beer? So the color is not an indicator of the flavor or robust. I think this beer is very approachable for the hot weather or the cold weather. I like to go a little sweeter as the temperature reduces and add a little heat, add a little more alcohol. This one was the triple decoction, so it was boiled 3 different times, so you're not getting the bitterness. So I don't have to use a lot of the dark malt. I'm using just a little bit, but I'm still getting the dark color without that really astringent espresso coffee roast bitterness. You're getting more of that sweetness, that cookie.
Yeah, we don't need roast, too much roast.
No, that would be just very out of context. So you're able to get that, and you're getting that really rounded, smooth flavor as well.
Daniel, as advice from, you know, a seasoned brewer to a newer brewer, anything you want to say about this beer?
Well, I like it very much.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, unfortunately, many...
And Jeff is like...
Dark beers.
Give me beer.
Many nights...
David wants a refill in the studio.
Too many dark beer or stouts, especially from some Belgian breweries, are really strong, really heavy.
sometimes very sweet. And like most people in France, at least, they think dark means strong.
Right.
You know, they expect, in my brewery, the dark beer are even lower alcohol than the blonde
Same.
One.
You so, have to.
And so I agree absolutely that it could be a summer. You know, it's really refreshing. And that's, I think, the way we should drink. Brew these kind of beers.
You really can't have too much in the summer and the fall. I think in the winter you can get away with it more because people want to warm up a bit. So you want a little bit more sweetness, a little more caramel, but you need also a little more alcohol, a little more heat. But this is not the time. You still need that balance because you don't want to get so full. You want something to complement your meal and complement your night.
Cheers to that.
Okay.
Another difference maybe with you is that in as many Belgian brewers, again, I do use spices in my dark beers, very, very small amounts, but I think it adds, so hops, of course, and some spices, like also in the Christmas beer, which is traditional to do so. I think you don't.
Oh, no. Oh. The Rheinheitsgebot police would come and take me away, and I'd never brew again.
You do have to follow the kind of the palm.
We are a classic Bavarian brewery. For our entire history, we have been a Rheinheitsgebot brewery, which means we only use the four main ingredients, hops, barley, you know. Actually, we couldn't even use wheat until, I guess, one of the princes had a monopoly on wheat beer.
So it's like being at the embassy. You're kind of on German soil, even though you're in the... So you are subject to the Rheinheitsgebot.
Oh, my gosh. If they, I said, hey, I threw a little cardamom in here.
Daniel's smiling.
You're fired.
So
he feels liberated now.
No.
I live in the freest country in the world, France.
The freest beer country.
No, but extra is okay with the low, the purity.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 500-year-old was the first human food consumer protection law. So it's very important for tradition and for us to make
beer.
We did
a show with Sebastian Sauer calling in for that, the 500th anniversary. But last thing is food and beer pairing. So where you are in France, tell us the town.
Esquelbecq.
Again, it's something I can't
remember. Yeah, I know.
it's sort of so good.
You have to understand that it's the part of this part of France is called Flanders, as the Belgium,
right.
But French part of Flanders. So most of the town or city names are the Flemish origin, so it sounds Flemish. So Esquelbecq, Beck means river, so it's.
So with your Thierry extra, what's a favorite food pairing? Maybe your wife wants to say it too. Do you cook at the brewery? Do you serve the beer with dinner at all?
Yes, we advise the consumers. We don't really use it a lot for cooking. Well, my wife does sometimes. I would drink extra with fish, smoked fish, with the salty side of the smoked fish and the bitterness of the beer. I think it's the best. It could be also some kind of cheese, of course, not too strong, but also same sort of salty cheese. Yes.
And Justin, what about with your Dunkel Lager? What would you serve it with at Polenet?
Pork knuckles. You have to be very traditional. While I was in Germany studying under my boss, Uli, every day he would bring lunch. And I guess the German way is, here's the lunch we're having today. And it would always be some giant piece of pig. And I am kind of a pescatarian, usually. I try to stick to fish. And I would always have to consume this. And everyone clears their plate. It's very not
American.
I was
like, if you don't eat meat, substitute shellfish.
I found there is no shellfish on any menu there in Munich.
I'm a porkitarian.
A porkitarian.
So Jeff, last thing. So with your beer FAQ new book, do you have any talks about food and beer pairing? Or
there's a section in the back a little bit. You know, I'm not Garrett Oliver or anything like that, so I don't get in too detailed with it. But I have a few sort of things where I talk about, you know, what things go with pasta, what things might go with pizza and stuff like that. A lot of different beers go with pizza. You know, I could kind of see even drinking this with a pizza with
Dunkel Lager, yeah.
Dunkel Lager.
You found my diet.
A nice good sort of meaty pizza, maybe with a little sort of prosciutto on it or something like that. I think this would go
sounds
great
like being
with
at Roberta's. We're at Roberta's Pizza. It sounds like what you guys should ponder is like the German brewery should make pizza, you know. And Jeff, last so beer FAQ, it's out now.
Yes, you can get it anywhere that you would buy books: Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Indie Bound, independent bookstores, anywhere, or you know, just shoot me an email and I'll send you
and
one directly.
You've been living in D.C.
Yes.
So what are some of the new breweries in D.C.?
Well, the best one right now, hands down, is Right Proper. They started as a brew pub and then they also opened a production brewery, both located within the city limits. They do really amazing things with sort of low ABV farmhouse styles. They're big on crazy riffs on Berliner Weisses and that sort of thing. And they rarely make the same beer twice, but it's really, I mean, they're pretty amazing. You know, and then you get places like, you know, Atlas Brew Works. They've got a great rye beer that, you know, it's highly recommended. They also do one called District Common, which is sort of a riff on a California Common. So it's, you know, it's sort of like an Anchor Steam. And I would also say, you know, I live in Alexandria, Virginia, and Port City. I got to give them a shout out. I mean, they're our local brewery, and they do some pretty great things. And we also have a new one opening up in Alexandria, the Portner Brew House, which should be open later this fall. And it's actually run by the great-granddaughter of one of the great beer barons of Alexandria back at the turn of the 20th century. And she's basically rebrewing some of his old pre-prohibition recipes and everything like that. So that should be opening soon, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Jeff, I should have asked that question at the beginning of the show. But thank you. And then beer. It's Cider Week in New York City. I know you brought a cider. We don't have time to taste it, but what cider did you bring?
I brought a New Zealand cider.
Ooh,
from it's a guy who used to be a winemaker. They don't have their own orchard, but they're sourcing them from – they're based near Auckland, but they get the ones from Nelson. And they also this version is hopped with New Zealand hops as well.
Big shout out Cider Week New York City. It's still going on. If you listen to this, it'll be done soon. But cider's really been growing in New York, in the Northeast, and really proud to have met a lot of the American fine cider makers like Dan Wilson from Slyboro and Steve Wood from Farnham Hill. And we'll be airing a couple other special cider episodes this week. And then last thing, BR, do you still have all your English cider makers in the portfolio?
Yes, we do.
Just list them off for us, because there's that English style we don't talk about too much. But
no, well,
of my
obviously,
favorites.
I mean, Tom Oliver, Oliver's Cider and Perry, he was here a few weeks ago. Henny's Cider, Hogan's Cider, Ross on Y, and I'm probably forgetting one, and I apologize. But no, we have a good amount of very traditional English cider makers.
I'd like to thank our sponsors, Union Beer Distributors, for helping bring this podcast to you tonight. And again, it's my fantasy night. I've got good buddy Jeff Cialetti, author, you know, a new brewer in town, Justin Meyer from at Polliner Brauhouse, and the guy who makes one of my favorite beers of all time, Daniel Thierrier from Extra. Thanks, guys, so much for coming on. You really made my night. And still check out Cider Week NYC if you're listening live. Thanks for joining me on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producer, Justin Kennedy, and engineer, David Tadashur. Thanks for listening. Catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Woo! Thank you.
Yes, people.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.